All right, welcome back to Coast, and we're going to have open lines for you for a couple hours tonight. Whatever is on your mind, time to sound off. We'll also take some of your text questions as well. Tom's got that phone back in the L.A. studios. When we chat with him in a few minutes about the next text message, we'll find out where we stand with our Twitter questions, too, because we're going to start doing that. So get ready for open lines on Coast to Coast AM. All right, great. I hope you had a great Independence weekend, by the way, and we're rolling into Thursday already in what will be the fastest year I've ever experienced. And I thought last year was fast. My gosh. I'll be back in Los Angeles next week, by the way. My job and duties here in St. Louis, time to move on for a little bit, but we'll be coming back here in August because of the Asheville event that I've got in North Carolina. Let's go to the phones. Robert's in Seattle. We'll have Robert get us started here, west of the Rockies on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Robert.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
I really wish I was able to talk to your last guest, and because I work for the Boeing company, and after Flight 800, we had the FBI and the NTSB come out to us, and I work for a group at Boeing called Experimental Flight Test, and so we are very informed about all the different aircraft, and they asked us, where would you plant a bomb? And my answer was the fuel control panel. If I was to plant a bomb on an airplane.
How would you do that, though? How would you get into the plane to do that?
You'd have to be on the flight line somehow and be able to have access to the plane. Really, all you have to do is put on a yellow reflective jacket and walk out there. No one's going to question you. If you look like you belong somewhere, you can get anywhere you want.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, you could.
I don't want to hear that. Jeez.
You don't want to hear that. No. That happens, though. But there's a couple other questions that I had about the your guest was LL was also in line for that flight, which is the Israeli airline.
That's right, and that's the one. If they were going to take something down, they'd go after that plane.
They would go after LL, yeah, because now what LL does, they do this all the time, is that they take off late. They take off early. They don't take off on time. They do this all the time. They do this at Boeing. They do this airlines.
That's probably smart on their part.
It is smart on their part. It is really well. And Flight 800 was just in the middle. I wish I was able to actually guess if there was an LL flight during that time. He did touch on that a little bit.
Robert, what was the private talk around Boeing about this whole situation?
The thing about Boeing, okay. During the time that this happened, Boeing was in negotiations with
McDonnell Douglas.
The tanker program, the new tanker.
Oh,
program.
You mean for the contract? Sure.
Yeah, and they got busted for conflict of interest because they offered the negotiator a job at Boeing if she was able to take this contract. And I think that Boeing, bought into the wiring problem because they wanted the tanker program. We now have the tanker program several years later, but we still have it.
It's all politics, isn't it?
It's all politics. You know, and I work on the aircraft.
Are you still at Boeing or did you retire?
No, I'm still at Boeing. I've been there for 28 years.
Well, let's hope you're still there Monday.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding.
But, Robert's not your real name, right?
No, it's not my real name.
Yeah,
no.
Exactly.
But there is separation between low power wires and high power wires. There's a separation between the two, so that cross electrical shorts won't happen. And the whole thing about a short circuit, cross circuit. I know this was the older 747 that happened, but the effect that a high power wire crossed over to a low power wire is not very viable because of the separation, and there's so many things that are so wrong about this. When they first put the airplane back together, I literally saw a impact hole on the fuselage, and then I believe there was some type of Air Force sergeant or something like the Air Force military personnel that took off some seat cushion foam and found jet fuel or rocket fuel residue on
bomb residue.
Yeah, bomb residue. So, but, you know, the biggest problem I have, if it was the Navy, you know, your guest talked about he would be happy if it was a terrorist attack or something like that. He'd be happy.
He would prefer to know it was that than an accident. I'd prefer it to be an accident myself.
Exactly. And I believe it may have been a terrorist activity because I remember 20 years ago, there were two unidentified surface contacts on the water. And if it was the Navy, I'm sorry, I was in the Navy.
I was too. But I mean, accidents do happen.
Accidents happen, but you can't keep thousands of Navy people silent. You know?
Well, you're not supposed to, but this was so critical, so embarrassing, so damaging that they probably turned and kept quiet and, you know, said, oh, my God. Let's go to Michael in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Hi, Michael.
Hello, George, and thank you for another great program tonight.
Thank you.
I have to go back to last night's show. It's one of the highlights of Coast to Coast history, your interview with Steve Dynan. I imagine this. I imagine me getting together with a bunch of friends who know a bunch of friends that are well-connected in Washington. And we say, look, let's do this. Let's train George Murray. Let's give him 4 years to train for the vice presidency. And let's do it on national radio. And this program tonight is an example as to why that has to be done. You've heard a lot of Republicans, old-line Republicans, scared to death over Donald Trump, and actually sounding like they would rather see Hillary Clinton win. Now, there's a reason why that's so, and it's not going to be clear to this audience until we bring in top-level experts, people who have sat in that situation room, to train you on air to become vice president in 4 years. I'll tell you why. Nobody understands the big picture. We are dealing with the Cuban Missile Crisis. From that point onward, the world changed. Everything is seen through the prism of that by the people that we call the elite, the insiders, the globalists. But this message is not getting communicated, and the only way it's going to get communicated is if we actually train you on the air. And I will say this. Hillary Clinton, I have a lot of reasons why I would not want to see her become president.
Right.
But what Barack Obama said yesterday was this: I've seen her in the Situation Room. We want to see George Norrie in the Situation Room. You had Ted Koppel on, I believe. I know you had Dan Rather on recently.
Yep.
PBS did some roundtable discussions where they had former high-ranking cabinet officials in a Situation Room atmosphere talking about how you deal with various crises. You had on this program, Coast to Coast, you had a man about 8 or 9 years ago, who said the reason we went into China with all of this cash and money and giving away our manufacturing was to actually bribe them from causing a nuclear war, from making a fake attack that would cause either Russia to attack us or for us to attack Russia.
Exactly. Make them partners.
Right. You've also had on Thomas P.M. Barnett, the Pentagon's new defense map, where he laid out the strategy that all sensible and reasonable globalists are talking about. Now, you think about what the FBI director said. No reasonable prosecutor. That's the background he's talking about.
Yeah.
He's talking about the big picture and what Stephen Dynan said last night, George Norrie must do. You must get to know your elected officials. You've got to spend time with them. You've got to talk. You've got to make yourself available to help them think things through. We are talking about the survival of mankind, not survival of a political party.
Are you going to put this all on my shoulders, Michael?
Absolutely, because you're the man. You're the man that's broad enough minded. In fact, there's no second choice right now. You have to be the man that gets trained on the air for 4 years to become Vice President of the United States. Good night, George.
All right, Michael. It's quite an honor, but I don't know. Tom, you got a text for me back there in L.A.?
How you feeling about it?
Just call me Mr. Vice President, would you?
This one.
Why
is...
not Mr. President? That sounds better.
It does sound better.
Hey, by the way, what's up with our Twitter for questions?
As a matter,
can we start that next week?
As a matter of fact, I have a meeting with Lex in another half hour at the top of our hour when we take the break, and I will know a lot more then.
All right, very good. Now, what is my text?
Your text is from Jerome in Washington, D.C., and he says, "Hey, George, I feed the homeless at a volunteer organization, and I'm wondering, what would be your course of action if you were put in charge of curing world hunger?"
Oh, my. Everybody's giving me these presidential things to do. Well, first of all, everybody should have the ability to eat. I mean, we need more than just local soup kitchens. We have got to be able to help people who cannot afford what's going on this planet today. And, you know, a lot of people might say, you know, heck with them and all that. You can't. You got to provide some kind of housing. It doesn't have to be the Taj Mahal, but just put a roof over people's heads and feed them, for crying out loud. And I would put them to work. Anybody who's able and willing, I would put them to work to do things, you know, whether it's picking up trash along the side of the roads or something. I would not give them a free road, if free ride, if they physically can do this. If they can't, if they're confined to a wheelchair or they're elderly, you know, you got to protect them. You got to take care of them. And we got a budget for that.
I know you've been to Las Vegas. Have you seen how much food is wasted at those buffets? Like, that's a great place to start.
You know, a long time ago, I used to, I don't eat a lot. I'm not overweight, and I eat small portions. I hate leaving food on my plate. Mm-hmm. I think it's almost like a sin. And so I try to eat the minimal. As you know, I don't really like leftovers. I got a little hang up about that. I just try to eat the minimum and do that. This society wastes a lot.
Mm-hmm. They really do. They throw out a lot. So there's somewhere to start.
That's my answer on solving the world hunger problems.
One problem at a time, right?
We can make enough food. We can grow enough food.
There's
no doubt about that. All right, thanks.
Okay.
Jeremy's in Detroit, my old hometown. What's going on in the Motor City, Jeremy?
Hey, man, nothing much. It's the same old, same old. You know,
I love that town. God, I had a great time there.
You know, it's coming back. I mean, in 2000 and I think 8 to 10, I mean, everyone was just leaving. And now, I mean, people are coming back.
That's good.
Real estate's going back up. It's the place to be right now.
What's wrong with the Lions?
That's a good question.
My gosh, I thought they were going to go far this year, last year.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah. I don't know. And the Tigers aren't too good.
No, and they should have been better too.
Yeah, I think they're on a little curse right now going on, but it's all right. We just keep moving forward. But first off, how you doing?
I'm good. Everything's fine. I'm in St. Louis, going back to L.A. pretty soon, and actually, I got to get to Detroit to see Mom pretty soon too.
Perfect.
I'll do that on my next trip here.
How's Beyond Belief? You doing any of those?
Yeah, that show's going well. I'm going to be taping 4 more episodes this weekend, and so everything's good. How about you?
It's pretty good. I like those Beyond Belief. I checked out a couple of their...
Yeah, they're fun shows.
It's just like Coast to Coast, but it's a better setting. You know, you're in a suit.
Different setting. It's a different setting. Yeah.
It's cool. I like it. I like it. Anyway, yeah, I just want to call, give an update. I'm the same Jeremy that that had that $900 game. Remember that?
Yes.
That guy just gave to me.
Yep.
And I just want to let you know, I raised all the money, and I'm going to Nicaragua on Sunday.
You are?
Yeah.
How long are you going to be gone?
From all the way till the 17th, and I'm going with about 200-plus missionaries.
Wow.
So, yeah, I've never done anything like
that.
Well,
good for you. Be safe, of course.
Right.
Don't get bitten by a mosquito.
Yeah, bring the repellent, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but, don't bring any Zika virus back home, huh?
Yeah, that too, yeah. But, yeah, that's the quick, just because I didn't want to take up too much time, but I wanted to put that to the prayer list, just pray that our team, missions.me, and everything goes well, you know, the flights and all that.
Good for you.
And then the other thing is the story. I have two stories for you, and you get to pick which one you want to
hear. All right, give me my choices.
Okay, you got the passport miracle. Okay.
All right.
That's one. And then the other one's a near death where I definitely almost died.
Give me the passport miracle, because the near death, you can always save it for another show.
You know, I was thinking that exact thing. That's funny. That's perfect. Passport miracle. About 2013, I'm in church. I'm just doing my thing. I'm just kind of worshiping the Lord, kind of spending that alone time. And at the end of all of it, a family I never met my whole life turns around, and no, I'm going to be honest with you. Remember, nobody's ever given me money. I think I told you that.
Right.
Nobody's ever handed me money my whole life. The family turns around, says that the Lord put in their heart that I should have $150 and that it's for my passport. That's what she said. She handed me an envelope with $150 in it. I'm like,
jeez.
All right. So that's pretty coincidence. I know we don't mean you. We don't believe
there are no coincidences. Right. These things are done by a reason.
Right, exactly. But for the skeptic out there, I mean, that's, you know, people, they could write that off. But this is where it gets really weird. And this is why I called in Coast to Coast, because it's perfect for it. I was faithful with the money. I waited about a month. Faithful with the money, I put it in my bank account, and then I brought my debit card to the post office a month later. And I'm standing in line to get the passport, doing what she told me to do it.
Right.
Second in line. And I'm just standing there, minding my own business, not talking to anybody, not doing anything special. And a person comes up to me and says, I've been praying on who I should give this to, and it's you. Hands me $150 in the post office. Again. So it's another person, the exact same amount, the exact amount of a passport.
You had more than you needed.
Right, yeah. Now, yeah, exactly. But this is where it gets, like, super amazing. So that's two coincidences that are insane. But here's just the icing on the cake right here. I walk up to the counter. I hand the lady my debit card, all right? She looks at me and says, I'm sorry, you can only get your passport with cash only.
Oh, and you were ready. You had it. I love that story. Jeremy, be safe on your trip to Nicaragua. I think I said that right. We'll be back. And welcome back to Open Lines here on Coast to Coast AM. George Norrie with you. And we've got Tom back in Los Angeles taking your text messages. We're going to do another one of those in a few minutes here as well. So let us go to Preston in Daytona Beach, Florida, first-time caller. Good morning, Preston.
Good morning, sir. How are you today?
Good. Hope you are, too.
Yeah, so I was really interested in the topic earlier about the TWA Flight 800. You know,
yeah.
I've been in the Army now since 2004, and I've been overseas twice, once to Iraq during the surge, and again in Afghanistan in 2012.
And by the way, thank you for serving, sir.
Oh, absolutely. You're welcome. You know, 9/11 was a major reason for me joining up, and you know, I'm happy to continue serving, and now I'm in the reserves doing my part with them with active duty. But, you know, as I hear a lot of people talk about terrorists and talk about that's the reason why Flight 800 went down. Well, you know, the information's out there, you know, talking about different kinds of missile payloads and stuff. Terrorists don't have access to the big stuff. And I'll use in case in point the Ukraine incident. With the book, the Fox News talked about it hundreds of thousands of times. Big giant missile mounted on a giant tracked vehicle, and it's a theater denial.
Yeah, that's a government apparatus.
Right. It's a huge missile. And those things are designed to bring down bombers and big planes. Terrorists don't have access to that. And you're not going to put it in a boat. And you can't park it on, you know, Rockaway Beach. It's just not possible without someone noticing it. And that brings into, you know, so they have access to the small stuff. Now, I'm not a rocket scientist or an engineer. I'm just a soldier. But they train us, especially I'm in the aviation field with Army Aviation. Those small missiles don't hurt those big planes. They really don't. It'll cause minor issues unless it's a $1 in a million shot. They call it the Golden BB. But they're just too small. They don't have enough payload to bring down an aircraft of that size. Now, you need to talk about people with, you know, well, they found jet fuel. You know, they found bomb fragments. Well, the military and the FBI have been able to tell, we know what our missiles are made out of. We know what other countries' missiles are made out of. Half of ours are cellulose encased. You know, that's just how we build them. You know, we know what other countries build them with. No one ever came out and said, oh, we found traces of missile fragments or, you know, missile exhaust or anything like that. No, and so jet fuel and, you know, other stuff. You know, it's bomb fragments. You know, so it's really hard to try to put terrorism into that unless it's something on board the aircraft.
Well, and as Jack was saying, Cashel, that he believes it was a Navy missile gone awry.
Well, you know, and then now you're talking about safety features. You know, granted, I wasn't in back then, but we've got old computers that still fill up the size of rooms in the military.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. You're right.
It just doesn't change. So, you know, you'll hear people make comments saying, well, you know, he's a little bit on the newer side of the military. Well, we still use the same stuff. If it ain't broke, they don't fix it.
Yeah, they don't fix it. They probably have an old UNIVAC out there somewhere.
I'm sure they do, George. You know, but, you know, that's the point is their safety systems with the Navy, the Army, the Air Force, the Marines, they don't just lock on and fire even in an accident phase, there's still ways to remove capabilities of that missile, even in flight. Like you hit the button and, oh, shoot, it launched.
Blow it up, destroy it before it gets to its target.
They have the close-in weapon system.
So what do you think, Preston, happened?
Well, you know, I think it was an onboard issue. You know, it had to have been an onboard issue because if not, about a million different surveillance systems would have seen something going up from
he said we have that.
Well, you've got one of the world's largest radar systems in Cape Cod, Massachusetts, at Cape Cod Air Force Station. It's called PAVPAS. It's designed during the Cold War to track inbound Russian nuclear missiles.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing puts out enough energy, and I've seen it firsthand, cook an egg.
Would it be able to pick up stuff in New York?
It picks up space debris. That's what they use it for now, is picking up space debris. And it just punches out right over right north and east. All that area, and then not even to mention, you've got Gabreski. It was a full, back in those days, it was fully functioning Air National Guard base.
Would you do me a favor and go to Jack's email address? You can get it off of our website and tell him about this radar system.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Maybe nobody's even
Cape Cod Air Force Station.
Okay. All right. Maybe nobody's even looked at that radar, which might show this Navy missile going up. It's possible. Preston, thanks for the call. Tom, we got one more text here for the half. Go ahead.
We do, from Dalton in West Virginia. I like the subject of space like you guys do. I'm wondering if you can tell us how the Jupiter probe mission can benefit mankind. Why exactly are they spending money to do this?
Well, that's a good question, but I think it's just curiosity of knowing what's out there in space. And I think it's worth it. The kind of money that they spend sending probes to other planets, that's exciting space missions, and it's worth it. And if they find things, anomalies about Jupiter that we haven't been able to pick up from the Hubble Space Telescope, you know, it's just an added benefit.
I'm wondering, is there any chance it could be resources?
It's too far away.
Too far away?
Too far away.
Yeah. Is it true they launched that like in 2011?
It was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Amazing.
Yeah. And you know what? There's some, I think the Voyager is outside of our solar system now. You know, they sent that God knows how long ago.
It's amazing to me how they can almost pinpoint the time. Like they said, it's going to get there in July. And it was there.
Not only that, they had to fire the rockets precisely to slow it down so it could go into Jupiter orbit.
Mm-hmm.
And from all these millions of miles, they were able to do it precisely. That's amazing.
Isn't it baffling the smart people on this planet?
Oh, they're geniuses.
It's like crazy stuff.
They are the smartest. All right, thanks.
Okay.
Dwayne in Sebring, Florida. Hello, Dwayne. You're up.
Hey, partner. Thanks for taking my call.
You are very welcome.
What I would like to speak about is applied science versus the United States government.
All right.
For your listeners, this is a very important bit of information who loves science. What it deals with is a gravitational equation that allows the field of gravity to be increased and decreased has been found.
That's amazing.
And it completes the physics trilogy.
You know, can't you time travel? If you can control gravity like that, can't you time travel?
No. Gravity is a one-way system. You cannot control it. It cannot be controlled. I would just like to state quickly the equation and how it completes that trilogy.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, the trilogy in completion is mass equals E divided by C2. Then it's E equals MC2. The equation for a field of gravity is C2 equals E divided by M. And what this states is the Big Bang is impossible, because when your mass remains constant, your energy becomes a variable, which states that as your energy increases, a gravitational field also increases, so that you cannot have a compounding of gravity itself.
Now, let me ask you, Dwayne, if there was no Big Bang, and I tend to agree with you, what was it? What jump-started the universe?
Okay. The first two equations describe creation. It says that...
And put it into terms we can all understand here.
I'm going to do that. It states that the single constant of creation is C2, which is a velocity. You and I and everything in the universe is composed of physical time. That is why we cannot escape that which they wish to escape. It is because our composition is universal. The Big Bang could not be compressed and then released as they say it is now, because mass cannot contain more energy than what it is composed of.
Well, I never subscribed to the Big Bang theory anyway. I found that very difficult to comprehend. But equally so, I don't know what we have before Big Bang. What was it?
The creator. In order to have creation, you have to have a creator.
So you're a scientist who believes in the creator.
I know it's true, partner. You know, you can't say empirical proof, but there is no other answer. Mankind is too complex. Just a single cell is an impossibility.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah. Right on. Dwayne, you're going to have to come on when more physicists and astrologers and astronomers and biologists come on the show. I like your perspective. Let's go to Indiana now. Ruth is with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Ruth. Good morning.
Good morning. I want to talk to you about the spraying that Mr. Obama is doing.
The chemtrails?
Yes. Well, he's still spraying at 2 a.m. I looked out, and I don't want to swear.
Why do you say he's spraying? Maybe he doesn't even know about it.
Well, he's the one that caused it, because there was a man that came on and said on the radio and said that there was 26 more airplanes that they had to put the panels on so they could spray. Came on the radio and said that. And he's still spraying. A lot of people don't know it because he's doing it at night. And the reason I'm calling you is anybody lives in the country, in 2 or 3 years, they're going to be underwater. There's a soybean field across from where I live.
All right.
It's been underwater, so help me God, the whole time.
It's That's like a little lake has become the soybean field.
Yes. And the people that live in it, and always, not just their houses that's going to be soaked up. Those houses in Virginia, those 100 that's...
Oh, my God, that was horrible.
That's because he had sprayed and sprayed up there. But my house is starting to sink. And I have sold it.
You mean like caving in?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
You can go around and you can see where the ground is cracked and everything. And about 20 days ago, I got it sold. And, well, it's not complete yet. And tomorrow I'm going to buy a house in Madison, Indiana. The people in town are going to be safe. But the people that live in the country, I feel sorry for them. I told my neighbor today, I sold him a farm. And I told him, I said, the best thing you do is to sell, because in 2 to 3 years, you won't be able to give your
property away.
Yes. And
that's sad.
I believe that if people don't get out of the country and get to the city, they're going to be very sorry. That's why I called in, sir.
All right, Ruth. You be safe out there. But you're right. There are chemtrails. They're spraying something. We think it's for weather manipulation, but nobody knows for sure. Miles in the state of Washington. Hey, Miles, go ahead.
Hey, George, how's it going?
Good. Thank you.
I just celebrated my 28th birthday a little while ago, but my mom got me a season one of Gunsmoke. I've been watching that, you know. Pretty good.
It was one of the best in television days.
Yeah, Matt and Dillon, man. Yeah, I wish they had shows like that nowadays.
I tell you how far back I go. I used to watch it when it was original.
Yeah.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah. Hey, George, can you send me a copy of The Nighthawk?
Yeah, I got to get my full copies. I don't have them yet. I'll get them in about 2 weeks.
Okay.
So send me an email.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Sure thing. And I'll sign it for you. I don't have many promos copies to give out, but it's a great, I'm trying to get it as a weekly television show, and some folks in Hollywood are very interested in doing that. I think this thing's got some legs. It really does. And ParanormalDate.com looks like is going to be a reality show. Tom's the executive producer on it, and he's been working with someone we can't announce yet, but that is looking very promising as well. Let's go to Gary in Santa Maria, California. Gary, what's on your mind?
Oh, I'm going to hit you with a bunch of what a lot of people would call coincidences that will show you that Paranormal Date, you, Steve Wozniak, the director of Star Wars, are all nuclear-powered with the same chart that Hiroshima has.
But what is this what does this all mean?
Well, you take the chart from Hiroshima.
All right.
All four markers. Steve Wozniak had all four markers.
Steve Wozniak, one of the founders of Apple Computer, for people who don't know.
Yeah, and Steve Jobs ended up being worth 100 times what Steve Wozniak. Wozniak's still worth $100 million. He's not a poor boy.
No, he's not a poor boy.
But Jobs was worth almost $10 billion towards the end. Steve Jobs was not my favorite person. He was not the brains behind Apple, and even Wikipedia has some very unflattering things to say. It did not disappoint me to say that his movie did not do well. That being said, if you look at the executive producer of Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back, Dark Crystal, was, now get these names, Gary Kurtz. Steve Wozniak's middle name, Steve Gary Wozniak. If you look at Jimmy Dean's son's name is Gary. Steve Wozniak's father's name, Gary, my father's name, Jerry. See, Blasey has mother's name.
All right, but so what, Gary? So what? What does this mean?
It means that there's a synchronicity that things were blowing forward at Hiroshima. Things were set into motion. I worked with artificial intelligence with Steve Wozniak in the early 80s. I documented it publicly. 1996, I posted a comment with FCC that is in the public domain that I'm linking to on my channel that detailed out 4G speed in 1996 when everything else was running at 2800 baud. You are tied to the hip.
Me?
With this, you, ParanormalBait.com, and John John Ledger, the CEO of T-Mobile, same markers. He has a doll. It's called hashtag Creepy Doll. Creepy Doll has 4,100 followers.
What's he doing with a creepy doll?
It's made in his image and likeness. Now, look at Jim Henson. Look at Dark Crystal. Look at the Star
Wars. All right, I'm going to go look at all these, Gary. I'm going to go look at all these. These are way over my pay grade, I'll tell you that. But I'll have Tom do all the legwork on that. Sometimes you overthink these things. So just take it easy. We'll be back.